Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
So the chief executive of the Peter McVerry Trust, Pat Doyle, announced yesterday that he's going to step down as head of the charity after nearly 20 years in the role. In a message to staff on Friday, he said he's going to be leaving the position at the end of May, and Pat's here now. Pat, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Clare.
We're just going to take a look back at the work that you've done and look ahead as well to what you're going to do next. You'd planned this, had you, for a while?
I had. I mean, a lot of people plan what they're going to do and getting into something, but don't plan how to get out of it. So firstly, it was a privilege and a pleasure to be working with Peter. I never thought I'd last 18 years. I didn't plan to either, but it just, there was such a need. There was so much work to be done. It always felt like there was more to do. But the last few years, I felt, maybe it's time for someone else to see it differently, to see a different aspect, to bring a different thing to the table. Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, I went back to college, and I suppose that was a clear decision on me about what was next in my journey.
So what did you do in college?
I went back to do a second master's for my sins. I don't know why, but I went back to do a master's in psychotherapy. And, giving the key to the door to our client group is such a privilege. They light up when they get a key, but about 5% of them don't hold on to the key because a lot of our client group would have childhood trauma. And for those who have the most extreme childhood trauma, you know, addiction, alcohol, mental health, other things get in the way and they lose the key to the door, you know.
So did that play on your mind a
lot? It did. And like I'm 34 years in the sector, and years ago I used to think about the Simon and Garfunkel song when I was a child, and that kind of motivated me around, you know, giving a blanket, giving a sleeping bag, giving a bed. But the next decade, I realised, well, we need to do more than give a bed. We need to give a house, a home, you know. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking of the next one as well. For the very small few of our client group who find us and struggle with loneliness and isolation and the demons of their past, there's more to be done around trauma and more to be done around dealing with that. So I'd like to spend the next, if I'm lucky, if I'm privileged enough to get time to work with the client group for the next 10 years or so, I'd like to work more with those individuals around, you know, just dealing with their past.
So counselling, psychotherapy, that's what you're going back to do?
That's it. I've been training in that for the last 2 years. I have a bit more training to do in it, but I'm seeing clients under supervision now as well, and that's a privilege too.
Yeah, because people might have looked at that announcement and gone, oh, is he disillusioned now because homelessness seems to be either standing still or slipping back?
It was really great. One of the hidden benefits of COVID was we got the number down, and the first time in a decade that I could see the number going the right direction. And it's been really, really sad and disappointing to see the number going back again, mm-hmm. you know. But no, this has been a well-planned thing. Like I do all the inductions with our staff. I did one yesterday. That was probably my last one with 30 staff there. And I always say to them, you know, whatever you do, please, when you get out of bed in the morning, you know, and put your feet on the floor, want to come into work, want to be there, want to make a difference, want to change lives. The day I said you don't want to do that, stop coming in. Because, our client group sometimes only get one chance, and you need to be the very best, and you need to be 110%. And I always said to the board that whenever my time is up, I'll know before you know, because mm-hmm. I will never stay longer than I need to stay. And, you know, to put it in context, I have two beautiful children and a beautiful wife, Debbie, and Daniel is 20 and Emily is 18 and a half. And I'm the CEO 18 and a half years. So it's been like a tour child.
For all of their lives.
And they're beginning to move on. They're both going to college now. And so it's time for me to let go of the other baby now and to hand it over to the next generation. So it's not a demotivating factor. It's around actually knowing when to step aside to allow someone else with the same energy I've had for most of that 18 and a half years to get on and do it, because it requires nothing less.
It's quite a step, though, to go from what you were doing, running what has become a very large organisation now, to looking at doing one-on-one counselling with people. I know you'll be working with groups and doing different things, but essentially it's a big change.
It is, but behind it all, my wife would know this, like she's actually the extrovert in our household and I'm the introvert. So although the job has required me to be out there and to do all of that, I'm quite introverted. I chose Peter as much as he chose me. I was quite happy with him to have the accolades and to have the awards. And so working on a one-to-one is a huge privilege. And I've still maintained contact with loads of clients. My wife doesn't let me come into town at the weekend because it costs us money, because I have clients approaching me from left, right and centre.
Roy, so, you told me that before. You always have have a few bob.
I always do, and you know, and I never give it a second thought. In fact, I will stop the car and go back into the house to get the money to make sure that I, because it's not about the money, it's about the connection. And I've always had a connection with the client group. And you know, and that's what happens in every sector. If you're good on the front line, you get chosen for management. So I never wanted power. I never wanted to be the CEO, but I did want to make a difference. And if you're good, you end up getting to this. And so I'm like 18 and a half years doing HR, finance, fundraising, putting out fires. And I'm quite looking forward to getting back to the client group. You know, I've missed them.
Did you ever become disillusioned, particularly in recent years, about how we are dealing with homelessness in this country and the housing crisis?
I do. And, you know, everybody always tells me there's a memoir in that. And I have to say, and I'll get into trouble for this now, but sure, listen, I've always...
You're on the way out anyway.
I've always said what I wanted. You know, we have great political support at the moment. We've a huge amount of money, huge amount of goodwill. But on a local level, and I've always said this, and I've said this like at recently at the Fianna Fáil think tank in September, and I said it at the Fine Gael one 2 years ago, at a local level, we still lack leadership. So one of the most common emails I get is, "Dear Mr. Doyle, the Peter McVeary Trust does a great job. You're a great organisation." But then the next paragraph is like, "Feck off and do it somewhere else. Don't do it next door to me." And it's all about the objections. And yesterday I was down in Town End Street, the oldest Dublin City flat complex in the city, just at the back of Store Street there. We're doing 20 units down there. I was down overseeing... at the beginning of the builder coming in there. It's taken 8 years because of objections all the way to Bord Pennoy.
And that's common and, across the board,
and
is it?
And what we need is local leadership from each of the parties in opposition and in government at a local level. Like, we went into Tuam last year and the negativity from some local politicians about us going into Tuam was kind of like scandalous. And we're there now over a year. We have 11 residents who are entitled and to housing and are getting on with their lives, and that hasn't been a peep. Yeah. And yet the scaremongering about us coming was just awful, really.
And it's important to say that, and I don't want to single out particular areas, because you're saying that's across the board.
Across the board,
probably,
every party.
Are you saying that you've never not seen it, almost?
I've never not seen it. I saw it in 2007 with some people we all know, and I'm still seeing it.
Okay.
You know, so I think at a political level, at a higher level, everybody wants to solve this. It's in everybody's interest. But on a local level, it's just everybody wants you to do it somewhere else. And I think we need to have mixed tenure communities, and we need to have the most vulnerable living in the community, just like we need housing for disabilities and travellers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not only homeless in this country, travellers and disabilities, we need more housing for every target group.
And the Mail is reporting today that officials are saying now that a key part of the housing strategy aimed at delivering 5,000 apartments, that's too small, and they're struggling to attract developers. This is part of the Croí Cónaithe scheme. There's €450 million
Correct.
Behind that. How do you feel that, you know, parts of the government's housing strategy are really struggling now to get off the ground, despite the money, despite the political will, as you say?
Yeah, I've been saying, I met with the Taoiseach there about 3 days, 4 days into office, and I met with the minister umpteen times, and you know, we had their ear. You know, they were definitely listening. But what I was saying was that any state funding now on housing has to have a mandatory amount of apartments. Nobody wants to build them. So if it's an approved housing body, and I'm the president of the Irish Council for Social Housing, and we'll deliver one in every two social housing this year, and Donald McManus and his team do a great job there. And like, but what I'm saying, if we're building with state funding, we need to put a mandate on it that, you know, X amount of percent needs to be one beds. 55 to 60% of everybody in homeless services requires a one bed.
Well,
and nobody's building them.
Well, then, Pat, they're going to have to be built not for profit. They're going to have to be built by the state.
Absolutely. And I said that to the Taoiseach and I said that to the Minister. We need to be, you know, just mandating that to build. And we need to do that with planning as well. We need to move away from developers deciding what's needed in Selbridge, where I live, and what someone else needs, but rather what's the community of Selbridge need. And what the community of Selbridge needs is the mix.
Yeah.
We need four beds. The highest number of families in homeless services require a 4 or 5 bed, and then the rest of people in homelessness require a 1 or 2 bed, and that's what we should be building. We should make sure that, and we should put a kind of a quota on it. You know the way we have a quota for gender balance and so on? We should have a quota within the housing that half of what you're coming in for planning should be this type, or don't come in at all. And if we're paying for it, we should demand it.
I know a lot of what you were doing over the course of the last year involved help for Ukrainian refugees coming in. You were very involved there as well. I mean, what do you see? What's the outlook there as we look, you know, down the barrel of another year of this?
Well, I think the biggest message has to be that we need to do both. Everybody's looking to say, should we be doing this and should we be doing that? When you see the lives and what people have to deal with on a daily basis and what we're experiencing with people and the shock and the trauma when they arrive, it's a privilege to work with the Ukrainian community. So we need to do both. I suppose we need to be better, though, you know. I mean, you look at what Germany did under the previous administration when there was a big exodus from Syria and so forth. Mm-hmm. They were building a million modular units a year. Like we should be building. I think the housing agency here is a fabulous organisation. I don't think we need another Quango or another organisation, but I think we need to scale it up like the housing executive in the north and give it more mandate. So they had a housing executive in the north because, you know, there was the whole thing about, are we building in Protestant or Catholic communities and so on, or nationals and Protestant communities and so on. So I think the housing agency should be mandated to buy more land, build more one beds, build more four beds, let them lead on that because they have the expertise and the skills and they just need to go ahead from the Department of Finance, really.
And are you in favour of this modular housing idea? I know some of them are under construction at the moment.
I absolutely am, and we've led on a couple of them in the past. In fact, the Trust is doing a modular project in Limerick. There was a local factory there building local units. It ran into difficulty when Putin went into Ukraine and the cost of materials went up and everything else. But it's back on track now. We're finishing off the first 14 modular units and we've another 38 on the way in Limerick. And basically what we're doing in Moyross and South Hill is where the council in the 90s were demolition properties, knocking them down, we're building them back up again on modular. Mm-hmm. So it's quick as well because we don't need the planning because there's existing units there.
I said earlier on that, you know, the Peter McFerry Trust has just changed so much in the 20 years that you've been involved. Can you give us a sense of that? What did it look like when you went in and what does it look like now?
Well, first of all, I was scared going in because Peter McFerry, I remember he offered me the job and the following night he was on the Late Late Show and I said, that fella hasn't a chance of retiring now and I'll never be able to get the teddy bear off him. So we fought the teddy bear for about the first 3 years. And I used to say to him, you know, if this goes belly up, I said, you'll end up with the Jesuits anywhere in the world. I said, I'm married with two children, a wife and a mortgage. I have to work here. So we had two hostels, 24 clients, 13 staff and two apartments. And we now have, and the 24 clients were in homeless beds. We now have 1,000 homeless beds. We have 1,100 apartments. We've 850 housing force units, which is a way to go, take people off the street and give them their units straight away. We're a 50 million organisation now, 55 million, and we've 800 staff. So it's been a huge privilege and an honour. The biggest privilege was marrying Debbie. The biggest honour was working with Peter. And I haven't done it on my own. We've done it as a whole team. It's been just a wonderful experience. I wish we had solved it and I wish it was coming in to say that we're closing down the Peter McFerry Trust, you know.
Like what does it say about the need that you're, you know, you're at that size and you could continue to grow?
Yeah, and there's a huge guilt on my part then personally around that, you know, walking away now. But we've 113 years among the management team in the Trust. We've built up a great team. People have been so loyal. They've stayed for years and there's some people in there younger than me. And, you know, and they've got such energy. And I think they're the future, you know. And the biggest thing I like about the Trust is I ring the services every Christmas Day. And it's primarily young people working there. And I'm always expecting to need to apologise to them for working with our client group on Christmas Day. They're absolutely delighted to be there. So it's been a huge privilege, a pleasure and an honour. And we've had such support from the public, from our donors and from the media by and large most of the time.
Why do you feel guilt? Why do you use that word?
I suppose it's a human Irish Catholic thing. We grew up with it, didn't we? And, you know, and it takes years to shake it off. But I suppose, my father died when I was 10. And so my first goal was to live as long as he has. I've achieved that. The second thing was to get my children beyond the age. I lost my father. I lost him at 10. My children now, Emily is 18 and a half and Daniel is 20. So I've achieved that one. But I would like to be around for them, for the stepping stones, like graduations and marriage. These are all the milestones in life. Mm-hmm. And our client group, I'm trying to create that for our client group as well. Get them back to college. Get them to do all those things.
But
and
you
the
realize,
key to the door does that.
But you have to look after
yourself.
I have to
look after myself as well, and I want to be there for my children. My father wasn't there for my graduation and my wedding and so on, and I would like to be there for them. So it is time to kind of put them first. They've been so generous in sharing me. They used to give out. It was a sad day when they stopped giving out, in fact, you know, but I'm hoping to be around for the next generation.
They'll be giving out
now. I'm deeply indebted to them, you know, so thank you.
They'll see too much of you, Pat.
Yeah.
Listen, the very best of luck to you on this new phase of your life and your career. Thank you very much for coming in, Pat Doyle. Still CEO of the Peter McVerry Trust until May anyway. Let's go to the newsroom now and to Brian Jennings.